Welcome to the April 2016 podcast for Neurosurgical Focus. I'm Natalie Pincham. The April issue is on the topic of sports injuries, diagnosis and management strategies. In this podcast, we hear a conversation between topic editor Dr. Hunt Becher and Dr. Vincent Ban of University of Texas Southwestern, Dallas, and Dr. Richard Menger of LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport, Louisiana. They discuss Dr. Menger and colleagues' article, Rugby Headgear and Concussion Prevention, Misconceptions Could Cause Aggressive Play, which appears in this month's issue.
This is Hunt Becher, and I'm with Dr. Vincent Ban, and we're going to be discussing a paper entitled Rugby Headgear and Concussion Prevention, Misconceptions Could Increase Aggressive Play. And the lead author is Dr. Richard Menger, and I will have him introduce his co-authors for this paper.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Becher. My name is Richard Menger. I'm one of the residents at LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport. And the co-authors on this paper are Austin Menger, who is at Georgetown University, and then Dr. Nanda, who is our professor and chairman of neurosurgery at the LSU Health Sciences Center in Shreveport.
Excellent. If you wouldn't mind just starting by giving us an overview of what led you to do this study, and tell us a little bit about the methodology.
Yeah, absolutely, sir. So I think the study came to be very organically. So I was a rugby player in college. Our other co-author is currently a rugby player. And I wore some of the headgear that we'll talk about and was very surprised when I found out that it did not, in fact, prevent concussion in any capacity. So I think that's kind of where the nidus, you know, where this came from. And then, you know, kind of building upon that is that, you know, Dr. Nanda has been very involved in Louisiana with the Louisiana State Youth Concussion Act in 2011. So this has been a real passion of his. So I think when the three of us kind of got together, we saw this genesis of thought and idea kind of come together. You know, so how we came together is very, very grassroots in the sense that, you know, we directly contacted the players of the different rugby teams. And, you know, we went out there and got data from 19 different teams, all at the collegiate level. And we wanted to find out what did these players believe about the headgear that they were wearing in their matches. And, you know, to do that, we did an internet survey solicitation, and we took a look at which club they played with, which college team, their age, experience, whether or not they were using the headgear, how much they were playing, and whether or not they played football or wrestling in high school. We took a look at kind of those pieces of data and tried to link it to whether or not they believed headgear prevented concussion, and then wanted to tag that, more importantly, to see if wearing headgear would kind of increase their aggressive play style. So that's kind of where we came at it from and, you know, what we tried to get out of our study as we were coming to paper with this.
Some of our audience may not be as familiar with this type of headgear as they are, say, with football helmets, much more common in the United States. So tell us a little bit about what the headgear is actually like and why it was developed.
Yeah, absolutely. So the game of rugby, I think it's probably easiest to start there. It pretty much, to put it in football context, a giant game option football in the sense that there's no blocking and no forward passing. So there's a lot of physical contact. And the nature of the sport is that there's no hard protective gear of any kind. So the only required gear are a shirt, shorts, socks, and cleats without spikes. Over the years, there's been kind of a call for more protection. And the scrum cap, which is that headgear, is actually nothing more than a piece of cloth. It can't be more than about 1 centimeter thick, and that is governed by the International Rugby Board. And the reason it initially developed, this is back actually in the 1800s in England, the reason it developed was to prevent head and scalp lacerations. So, you know, the typical cauliflower ear or the cut to the head or the ear or something like that is what it initially developed for. And, you know, over the years, that's been studied pretty well, and there has been a statistically significant reduction in superficial head lacerations with players wearing scrum caps. It's been studied in a randomized fashion and has been studied looking at World Cup video footage in 2004. The issue is that a lot of those studies have also not seen any correlation with the headgear preventing concussion. So we kind of stood at that and wanted to say, hey, what are these players really thinking? What is the culture of information in college rugby players in the United States?
You know, in the sport of rugby, what is the most common mechanism for concussive injuries? Is it head to playing surface? Is it head to head, head to shoulder, hip, whatever? I'm just not familiar with that.
I think, you know, most of the injuries occur during the part of the match that involve either running or tackling. I think the big distinction between American football and rugby is the dedication, the need for proper form in the tackling and the running. And that's taught in countries, and players grow up in countries where rugby is the preeminent sport. They learn it when they're 5 years old. In the United States, people are coming to the game a little bit later, and, you know, they've kind of grown up in a culture of American football, than a culture of wrestling, different contact sports. So, you know, it's really an emphasis on the running and the tackling aspect of the sport.
Tell us, if you would, the executive summary of your findings.
Yeah, so basically, the important overall theme from our study is that we had 122 players, about 20% of them actually physically wore these protective gear on the field, the headgear, and that's about on par with all the international data. But what we found was that 38% of college rugby players in our survey believed headgear prevented concussions. And again, the literature and the recommendations from rugby governing bodies don't support that conclusion. Even a little bit more concerning to us is that 42%, so just under half of the people that we surveyed, said that they were using headgear they'd run or tackle in a more aggressive form. And when we put that to a regression analysis, we saw that those who believed that headgear prevented concussion were on average four times more likely to play with an increased running or tackling form. So our concern here was that this was kind of a culture of misinformation that actually might put not just those players, but, you know, kind of all players on the pitch or field at an increased risk for injury.
What we've seen in football at all levels, professional as well as amateur and even schoolboy sport, is this perception that the helmet that we use makes the player a missile, invincible, and was really designed to prevent on-field death. That's what Noxy was formed for when we were having dozens of on-field deaths every year due to failure of the device, skull fracture, subdural hematoma, and so on. And the device you're describing, it seems like it would be a stretch to believe that it would be protective.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And they've also recently proved a thin layer of padding in shoulders as well. Again, the thought was to take out that initial bump from contact. So I think that a lot of the players, and myself being guilty of this, I think there's just an assumption that you're being offered some level of protection. You think that, you know, maybe when your head hits the knee or hits the ground, it's going to be just a little bit more padding than if you had nothing at all. And then that kind of gives you that false sense of security to maybe play with a little bit, you know, more aggression or a little bit more recklessly than proper technique allots. It's interesting that you brought up about the scrum cap or the headgear and injuries, because in 2003, the International Rugby Board, kind of the governing body of rugby internationally, always concerned that this padded headgear could actually be increasing cervical spine injuries. Because people, like you said, kind of were using it as a missile, and they were putting their head down and tackling people in a way that wasn't really the best form. So it's definitely an interesting area of research and debate currently.
Where would you like to take these results? I mean, can you go to the IRB, for example, with this and have them review it? And do you know what their thoughts are about whether headgear should be allowed in professional rugby or not?
Mm-hmm. I think that the big difference in the international rugby scene and the United States is, again, kind of that culture where the players are growing up in. And in the United States, American football kind of dominated the sports scene, and rugby is kind of coming on. It's coming on fast. It's the fastest growing sport, but it's still nowhere near the levels of participation in American football. That being said, the USA Rugby, which is the governing body of rugby in the United States, has been very responsive to concussion prevention and monitoring. They came up with 5 R's of recognize, remove, refer, recover, and return. So, you know, basically, any player showing any sign of concussion is removed from the match permanently, you know, cannot return until they're cleared by a medical professional. An adult player needs to be symptom-free, I think, for about a week, and then they can return to play in a 5-day graduated contact protocol. They're, you know, obviously, importantly, more protective in children, and they have them sit out for a minimum of 2 weeks before they begin that return to play protocol. In terms of removing the headgear from play completely, you know, I think that's still an area of debate in the sense that there was an article just recently out of England where an author drew a parallel to amateur boxing, and they removed headgear from their amateur boxing, and the amount of head injuries plummeted. So I don't think that necessarily the momentum is fully there to remove headgear from participation, and they absolutely do prevent superficial injuries, cuts, and cauliflower ear. But I still think that that's an area that is still, you know, being developed.
I mean, it seems like scalp protection, ear protection is well established. Has USA Rugby come in support of this type of headgear, or do they have a policy on it?
It's allowed in competition as long as it meets the criteria for the International Rugby Board's approved headgear criteria. So if it's deemed okay to play with any other major, a certain manufacturer, then they're able to be used. The Canadian Rugby Association, their governing body, has come out with an official statement that they do not support the use of headgear to prevent concussion. So I think this kind of comes back to the relevance, I think, of our article, and where I see it hopefully driving the discussion forward is not so much in the removal or the use of headgear, but more in the culture of misinformation that's out there. I think, you know, we have a lot of players entering the game at the college level for the first time, and I think it just comes down to an education platform about teaching them about concussion, about headgear, and about proper technique.
And, you know, ideally you'd really like to start even before that with the kids to just make sure they understand that it is not a brain protection device. It is a scalp protection device.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, rugby is the fastest growing sport in the United States, and more people are joining at the youth level. And, you know, it's very important from an early age, like you're hinting at, to educate them in exactly what this headgear is and what it entails. And, you know, as a point of reference, there's obviously a big youth rugby participation in the United Kingdom. And, I mean, they have a 0.3 to, I think it's about 7 or so concussions per 1,000 playing hours. So when you do the math, that's about a youth concussion every third game or so. So I think it is, you know, it's a serious issue. It's a reality of the game. And I think you hit the nail exactly on the head that teaching these players from an early age about proper technique and the proper use of the headgear is very important.
Well, I'd like to congratulate you and your co-authors. This is a very nice paper, and I think it's going to be very informative to the policymakers in rugby, both in this country and outside. So I really appreciate the conversation and your input.
Well, yeah, thank you so much, and all the authors are very grateful for the opportunity to share our work through this medium, and we look forward to developing this concept further.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care now.
This concludes our podcast for the April issue of Neurosurgical Focus. Please join us for the May issue, when the topic will be Neurorestoration, Reanimating the CNS.
Thank you for listening. The Journal of Neurosurgery mobile app is available in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today.